Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. In the arts calendar, at Ball State University through the end of the month, Three Sisters, Anton Chekhov's classic play, is at the Strother Studio Theater. Details at bsu.edu/calendar. Muncie Symphony Orchestra is at the Muncie Children's Museum on Saturday the 20th and has the Arts Walk concert in downtown on October 2nd. Check out munciesymphony.org. Muncie Civic Theater has The Little Mermaid, and Anderson's Main Stage Theater has Shrek the Musical starting October 2nd. And up at the Marion Civic Theater, Kathy Daniels is directing Mama Won't Fly starting October 3rd. One other thing in the calendar caught our attention. Ball State University's Building Better Communities initiative is hosting a conference October 16th on the idea called Primacy of Place. They say research shows the single most important element in strengthening local economies is attracting and retaining talented people. And that requires not only good jobs and schools, but attention to the quality of life in individual communities. Primacy of Place is the strategy of trying to improve life experiences for people and visitors in those communities. The idea is getting a lot of attention across the state, including Muncie, where the Delaware County Historical Society and other groups are thinking about how arts, cultural, and historical offerings can increase a community's attractiveness. For the Historical Society, that meant being part of the Old Washington Street Festival recently. We talked with Kelly Huth, the Society's president, at the Moore Youse Home, one of downtown's oldest buildings.
We definitely wanted to partner with the Old Washington Street Festival because there are a lot of historic homes that are open for tours today. We had restoration work that was done on the Moore Youse Home Museum over the summer, so we wanted to be able to open up the house and let people see what's going on here and let them know that the Historical Society is getting involved in more programming. There are lots of things that are going on with cemetery preservation committee and genealogy research, but we're going to be looking to expand those programs over the next year because Muncie's sesquicentennial is in 2015 and Indiana's bicentennial is in 2016. So we have a home museum here that we want to be able for the public to experience and know about, but also get input from the community about what kinds of programs they'd like to see in the future. We're trying to engage more young people in learning about the history of the community and getting involved in figuring out how to shape, you know, the history that they're experiencing, you know, as they get involved with community projects and those kinds of things. So today, you know, we're happy to be able to showcase the renovations that have happened with the Moore Youse Home Museum, sort of showcase that work, and then also just let people know that the society is getting more active and is going to be looking for new volunteers and people to contribute to what the programs will look like in the future.
The Moore Youse Home is a good place to start if you want to take a look at Muncie's history.
We're right at the corner of Washington Street and Mulberry, 122 East Washington Street. The Moore Youse Home was built in 1849, and three generations of family members owned this from the Civil War until the Ronald Reagan era. The last owner of the home was Mary Maxson, who left the house to the Delaware County Historical Society, and she died in 1982. So she wanted it to be used for Delaware County history and used as a, not necessarily as a home museum, which is what it has become, but she just wanted Delaware County history to be able to be showcased through this property.
When this house was built, can you almost close your eyes and imagine what this would have been?
It was land that was owned by Rebecca Hackley, who was actually the granddaughter of Miami Chief Little Turtle. So I don't think that there was a whole lot around here at that particular time. And again, 1849 is still one of the oldest structures in the Muncie area. You know, Bill Morgan, the historic preservation officer for many, many years in Muncie, said it's not the oldest structure, but it's one of the few that are left here. So there wasn't a lot going on around here, and it was a very small home that was built for someone and then sold to the family in 1867 and was able to stay with that line of women all the way through the 1980s.
More than 100 years. When we look at this, it looks like something that was built in the 19th century, doesn't it?
Well, and I think that in 1849, the porches were not there yet. They were added on later, maybe in the 1870s, 1880s. So they were in addition to the house. Again, it was a four-room house when it was built, and then has just been added on as the families grew and they needed more room. They expanded and added rooms onto the back of the house and also the second story. So those all came a little bit later.
What is it that you like about this house?
Well, I think that it's something that's a little bit different than the ball mansions that you see over at Minnetrista. When this house was built, the families were not wealthy families. You know, I think that there was wealth acquired later when Mary's husband died. Her husband, Jack Maxim, was one of the people who started the Maxim Burner Company. So, you know, when he died, he left her a lot of money. But the things that you see inside are not necessarily, you know, the fancy Victorian things that you would see in some of the other houses that were around here. So it's constructed.
This is more how regular people live.
Yes, absolutely. And that, you know, the story of how that changed over time. So you look at the collection in the house and it's very eclectic. You know, you see things from the 1870s and some of the very old treasures, you know, the furniture, the dolls. But you also see the wallpaper that she put into the house in the 1960s because she was still living here and the house was still changing based on that. So it's pretty impressive that we have three different generations together and it makes it a unique collection. There's no room in the house that is time period specific, you know, but it does tell the story of those families and the time that they spent here together in the house.
Are we at risk of losing places like this?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a challenge for the Historical Society to raise enough money to be able to do the repairs that have been done over the last year. And we were lucky to have the Psi Zeta Xi sorority and the Community Foundation and a lot of individual donors contribute to that because people didn't want to see, you know, that history lost. I think that home museums all over the state of Indiana and all over the country struggle, you know, because once you go into a home museum once, you know, what happens? You've seen it, you're not going to come back again. So what we're hoping to do with this house is to preserve what's here, but then also try to create some exhibits over the next year that will relate more to the county history and not just the history of this particular family line. So we want to use this as a showcase and definitely keep it, the artifacts that are here, many of them in place so that story is not lost. But we want to also be able to utilize the space to tell other stories about Delaware County's history, not just the time period that they lived here, but, you know, expand that and talk about, you know, things that happened before the family was here and, you know, things that have happened since as well.
Kelly Huth, president of the Delaware County Historical Society. We visited with her at the Moore Yaus home in downtown Muncie.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
So what we're really talking about today is this idea that communities are thinking of economic development in terms of making themselves more attractive as places to live. The theory is that if you do that, you will attract smart, talented people, and companies will be drawn there by the quality of the workforce. One of the best-known advocates of this is Richard Florida, who's written books like The Rise of the Creative Class, and says that metro areas with high concentrations of technology workers, artists, musicians, and other creative types tend to have better success at economic development. Closer to home, Professor Tom Lehman of Indiana Wesleyan University is an economist doing research into what creates wealth in smaller communities, Grant County, for example, where his school is located. We talked with him last year. The whole discussion brings up the brain drain problem, in which the state's best educated young people take off for jobs, or maybe just a more interesting place to live.
Do we find people leaving for jobs that are equivalent to what could be found in the state, but they want to live in a cooler place?
Yeah, that's very much it. I mean, it's not just jobs, it's the natural recreational amenities that come with those jobs, that are around those jobs. So Denver is, you might have a job in Indianapolis and somebody might live in Grant County and commute to that job in Indianapolis. But you could take the same job and place it in Denver or place it in Phoenix or place it in Austin, Texas, and it might become more attractive just because of that location and just because of the unique milieu in that area and the environmental amenities, the average climate, the temperature is more amenable or more appealing. And so you end up losing that worker, or you end up losing that class of workers, because in the Midwest, you can't control climate. You can't control those kinds of natural amenities.
Is this part of a general trend that communities, instead of just continually offering tax abatements or other financial incentives, are trying to improve the overall social infrastructure or something?
Well, we are very much in phase, as you alluded to earlier, of kind of a structural shift in the type of jobs that people do. And whether we stick with manufacturing as our primary economic base or we move into information technology, the types of jobs that people do are becoming increasingly more symbolic analysis, where they're requiring education, they're requiring analytical skills, they're requiring what Florida identifies as this broader kind of creative class. And those workers can work wherever they want. And so if you don't have the other social entertainment infrastructure, as you call it, then you risk losing them. However good the job might be, they might go somewhere else. And increasingly what we're finding, and urban economists like Ed Glazier and Richard Florida are saying, it's not about attracting the business firm as much anymore. It's not about what we used to call, or still sometimes refer to, as smokestack chasing. It's about getting rooftops. And those rooftops have to denote a particular skill of labor, a particular kind of labor, and then you will attract the businesses. So where 40 years ago it might have been attract the business and then the laborers will come and they will form your tax base, now it's attract the workers and the businesses will come. That's kind of the general shift that we are undergoing and that we are seeing, is that transportation costs, communication costs, those are low enough that a business firm that can be flexible, it can move where its workers are, where it identifies what kind of worker it wants and moves there. The worker identifies what kind of social and cultural context they want to work in and live in, and that's what they choose. Florida identifies people may move to the city that they want to live in as a consumer of that city, and then decide where they're going to work and what kind of a job they're going to take. Where it used to be, I better find a job, and then that will dictate where I move. People now make the decision about where to move quite independently of whether they have a job or not, and then take the job after. And business firms are very similar. They'll move to the area where the labor force is, rather than saying, we're going to build here because we have a special tax abatement, and then the workers will just come to us. So it's a very different world, and it's a tough challenge for the Midwest generally. It's tough. And then you look at the Midwest, and you look at the outlying communities in the Midwest, and it's even tougher for them. That's why I said, I think the best chance of these kind of outlier rural micropolitan communities in the Midwest is to develop as many connections as possible with their urban counterparts, create an environment where educated workers and immigrants and a diverse workforce are welcome, and then kind of promote these creative class enclaves as much as possible, just outside the perimeters of urban areas that might actually have more opportunity in some senses for natural and recreational amenities. And those natural and recreational amenities may be an attractive option for creative class workers.
Grant County ranks high in the proportion of the creative class because of Indiana Wesleyan University and Taylor.
Yeah. Academically, we are kind of blessed with not only Ivy Tech, but Indiana Wesleyan and Taylor. And so you look at the share of employees from those universities, those schools that actually take residence in Grant County, that boosts that creative class component, because that's part of that measure is education or academics or people in science and higher ed. So it does boost that, but then the question is, can we retain the students that we are educating, and can they take root here and find jobs? And
Well, this gets to a big public policy question, because there's a lot of discussion across Indiana now that we spend a lot on higher ed as a state, but those educated people leave the state. Is there any suggestion that if we somehow made these communities more hospitable to them by fostering a creative class, that more of them would stay around?
Well, that's part of the argument, because you invest in education, you put public money toward education, but you may be just permitting other states and communities to free ride on your expenditures if your educated workers exit. Right. Now, to be fair, many of those educated workers are coming from outside the state to begin with. So, you know, in a sense, to the extent that there's multi-tiered tuition expenses and so forth. But what you don't want to do is groom a student who already resides in the state, prepare them for participating in this kind of creative class type occupations, and then have them exit or leave the state. So the idea is, can you create some kind of attraction for them to stick around, stay around? And if you can create a creative class context, then maybe.
Tom Lehman, an economics professor at Indiana Wesleyan University, talking about the creative class in a conversation last year. We thought of him because of the Ball State Primacy of Place Conference being organized by Building Better Communities in Indianapolis next month. We started all this with the Delaware County Historical Society, which is making a big membership push and is making sure people know that when it comes to quality of place, the area's history can take a place with the arts and culture as attractions for the creative class.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
So there we were the other day, down at a neighborhood festival in Muncie. These things happen all the time, you know, a gathering, an attraction in the walkable city, the kind of events that make your town a good place to live. One of the stops for people at the festival, along with the beautiful restored homes, was the Delaware County Historical Society. Kelly Huth is the group's president. Like lots of nonprofits, they're interested in new members, more fundraising.
So when people become interested in this, they could join the Historical Society, and you'd welcome that.
Absolutely. You know, we're trying to attract more members right now. You know, there are not very many on the list, and I think that we'd like to engage a lot more young people who are interested in the history of their county, not only to become members, but to also give us ideas about what kinds of things are interesting to them. You know, what is it, as we interpret history of Delaware County, what is it that people want to hear about? So we've done some things traditionally, and there are some active committees, you know, that have been very active. There's the Pioneer Cemetery Preservation Committee that goes out into old cemeteries, and they'll work on restoring old stones. You know, if they've been knocked over and, you know, covered with moss or dirt for years and years and years, they clean those and put those back up. So they've been doing a lot of work at the Nottingham Cemetery. We also have once a month genealogy meetings with the Ancestor Hunters Committee, and that will attract, you know, 30 or 40 people for those meetings. There are lots of people that are interested in doing genealogy research, and that's what the resource center next door is for. And we have a resource library for those kinds of things. If people want to do research about their family or research about county history, and this is open Tuesday through Friday, noon to 4.
Some people have the impression, well, the folks who are in historical societies, old, really. You're a young person. What is it that you find fascinating about this?
Well, you know, I'm very passionate about community engagement. And I think that unless you understand where your community started and the stories that have made the city or the community develop into what it is today, it's really hard to see where you're going in the future. Not a lot of people who live in Muncie know the story of the Delaware Native Americans that were here. You know, they don't necessarily know that this was, you know, a result of the gas boom. A lot that happened and the way that Muncie grew was because of there was gas in this area, natural gas. So there was huge development during that time period, Industrial Revolution. And people see now, they see, you know, a city that has been in decline for some time because of the loss of manufacturing here, and it can be a very sad story, but I think that we're on the curve. You know, we're in the middle of a transition period, and there's lots of momentum and positive things that are happening again within this town, and we're trying to figure out how do we redefine ourselves as members of the Muncie community when we're not tied to that manufacturing way of life anymore. So what is it that we become now? And it's going to take people, you know, being active and deciding what do they want this community to be like. the young people are going to determine that, you know, how Muncie looks in the future. And it's not going to happen on its own. It takes people to get behind that and to be passionate about it and decide that they want to get involved, defining what that community looks like. So the history, I think, becomes critical, because you can't move forward until you know where you've come from.
There's a movement these days to work on economic development in communities based upon not just moving in a factory, but making them better places to live, increasing the attractiveness of communities to younger or better educated people, that sort of thing. There's a role, do you think, in that movement for a appreciation for local history?
I think so, absolutely. You know, it all makes sense. You know, people want to have thriving communities to live in. And, you know, economic development, I think that people are realizing that the old ways of developing shell buildings and hoping that people will come to a place that is otherwise, you know, not very lively, that doesn't work. And that if people see a community that they want to live in, they'll maybe pursue a different kind of job than they would have otherwise, just because the town has the amenities. So quality of place is really important, and history and culture are part of that. You know, I think that we want to have partnerships with, you know, other organizations, arts organizations in town. We want to be able to have the Historical Society be part of the downtown development scene. And there's lots and lots of positive momentum in Muncie's downtown. And we sit on the north end of that and want to make sure that we can be a part of that and partner with the organizations who are doing this well. So that's the goal, is to become a relevant cultural organization again, and to bring new people in and add to that quality of place that people are looking for when they decide whether or not they want to live in Muncie and stay in Muncie, what kinds of jobs that they want to have.
So the region's history could be part of the area's cultural attractions. The historical sites and places to go to like this would be part of the arts offerings, I guess, something
right.
like a cultural offering.
There are several J. Otis Adams paintings in the Morehouse Home Museum, and we plan to be part of the Arts Walk in October, the Downtown Development Group. You know, he was a prominent artist back in the late 1800s, and I don't think that a lot of people know that he existed or that we have these artifacts here, but there are six paintings in the house that we'll have open and be part of that Arts Walk. So we're hoping to, you know, not just the history itself, but, you know, to be able to pull out other artifacts that can represent what was here and highlight some of the people that were here that not many Muncie residents know about.
Inky kid in Confederate skin ain't never gonna fool no one but him. Hopped a train on the railroad tracks by his old school yard near Shotgun Shack.
Callie Huth, president of the Delaware County Historical Society, a group with a vision of itself not only as the keeper of history, but as one of the starting points in a community rethinking what it means to grow economically. The idea of quality of place, meaning arts, culture, and other amenities, like a good historical society, that make a community a better place to live. We thought of all this at the Old Washington Street Festival as hundreds of people gathered for a late summer afternoon under the shaded streets, enjoying tours of historic homes. And we thought of the upcoming Primacy of Place conference being organized by Ball State University. Primacy of Place refers to the idea that the most important element in strengthening local economies is attracting and retaining talented people. Reminds you of the Richard Florida work on the creative class and Professor Tom Lehman's research in small communities around Indiana. And that, members of the creative class, is our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you'd like more information. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture of Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flexsteel, Bassett, and Simmons Beautyrest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.